From NBC News World Headquarters in New York, this is NBC Nightly News with Lester Holt.
Good evening to our viewers in the West. Thank you for being here tonight. After what to many came off as a tone-deaf response to this weekend's racist-fueled violence in Charlottesville, Virginia, President Trump tried today to find the right notes as he took to the podium again to address the tragedy, this time calling out the KKK, neo-Nazis, and white supremacists by name for sowing the seeds of hate that blossomed into bloodshed on a Charlottesville street Saturday, when a car driven into a crowd left a young woman dead and more than a dozen others injured. It was part of a horrific day that also saw two police officers killed in a helicopter accident. Tonight, the president's words and actions under scrutiny as he faces a major test of moral leadership. Our chief White House correspondent, Hallie Jackson, has the latest.
President Trump today delivering the message many wanted sooner.
Racism is evil, and those who cause violence in its name are criminals and thugs, including the KKK, neo-Nazis, white supremacists, and other hate groups.
In unscheduled remarks, the president explicitly condemning those groups after he didn't on Saturday, triggering an onslaught of outrage in these last 48 hours.
To anyone who acted criminally in this weekend's racist violence, you will be held fully accountable.
Too little, too late, his critics say, with the CEO of Merck, Ken Frazier, quitting the president's manufacturing council as a matter of personal conscience. The president attacked Frazier on Twitter within minutes. His response to Charlottesville took longer to evolve. Saturday, an initial response seemed to spread the blame.
Hatred, bigotry, and violence on many sides. On many sides.
By Sunday, even top Republicans wanted something stronger.
Call this white supremacism, this white nationalism, evil.
Later, a response from an unnamed White House spokesperson slammed hate groups like the KKK, with the Attorney General this morning insisting the president was forceful.
He's not afraid to call out terrorism overseas. But here's a president that didn't do that. Why?
The president did do that yesterday. His spokesman said
that. That wasn't the president.
Now?
Can you explain why you did not condemn those hate groups by name over the weekend? They've been condemned. They have been condemned.
The president sees the alt-right and white supremacists and all that crew as part of his base. His view, pull and keep as many of those voters as I can.
The attack in Charlottesville, a reminder of the role of presidents in times of crisis, like September 11th.
None of us will ever forget this day, yet we go forward to defend freedom.
The Charleston church shooting.
Amazing grace.
All presidents meeting the moment, and for President Trump, a critical one now.
The mother of 32-year-old Heather Heyer, who was killed in the Charlottesville attack, tells NBC News tonight she thanks the president for denouncing those who promote violence. And tonight, by the way, the president will spend the night at his home in Trump Tower, where protesters already have gathered to greet him. Lester.
Hallie Jackson of the White House, thank you. We're also learning more about the suspect accused of turning the unrest in Charlottesville deadly by ramming his car into a crowd of counter-protesters. He appeared in court today while the family of the woman he allegedly killed, as Hallie pointed out, is speaking out in the name of peace. NBC's Tom Costello is in Charlottesville with the latest.
Arraigned in district court today, 20-year-old James Alex Fields said he understood the charges against him. Second-degree murder, malicious wounding, and hit and run. Police say Fields used his car to intentionally mow down a crowd of anti-hate demonstrators on Saturday, killing 32-year-old Heather Heyer. Among the 19 people also injured, 20-year-old Natalie Romero, an ROTC student at UVA who suffered a fractured skull, her mother in Texas.
She's my hero. And she has always been my hero.
Heather Heyer's family says they're heartbroken.
She was a strong, opinionated woman that was willing to stand up for what she believed in.
I'm trying to honor my daughter and the way that I know she would want to be honored, with speaking up for what she believed in and in the way she believed in it, without hate, without anger, without fear.
The nationalist community defended ourselves against thugs
Outside the courthouse today, two self-proclaimed white nationalists began screaming that police, the media, and counter-protesters were to blame for Saturday's violence.
The nationalist community came to Charlottesville to defend our heritage, to stand for Robert E. Lee.
Today, this photo of suspect Fields standing among white nationalists at Saturday's rally. Meanwhile, police, who lost two troopers in a helicopter crash Saturday, responded to allegations they didn't do enough to keep the peace.
Absolutely, I have regrets.
And what are your regrets?
We lost three lives this weekend. We certainly have regrets. It was a tragic, tragic weekend.
When I asked the police chief whether one side was the instigator, he said this was an alt-right rally, and they did not stick with their agreement with the police to enter the park from one side, and it quickly, he says, deteriorated. As for Alex Fields, he's being held without bond, and he has not yet entered a plea. Lester?
All right, Tom Costello, thank you. And as the investigation continues there, the fallout for those accused of supporting hate there is being felt far and wide as social media takes aim, naming and hoping to shame some of those caught on camera. NBC's Jolene Kent picks up that end of the story.
When the violence erupted in Charlottesville, the smartphones came out. Photos and videos captured individual faces, and the internet went to work. University of Nevada, Reno student Peter Svetanovich was caught on camera, and the naming and shaming began. He says he received death threats and calls to be expelled.
I understand the photo is very bad looking, but I don't believe that you should threaten my family. To me, that's monstrous. You can call me a Nazi, you can hate my ideology, but I wouldn't threaten anyone.
Under pressure, his university reacted, saying, "We remain firm in our commitment in denouncing all forms of bigotry and racism." At Top Dog Restaurant in Berkeley, California, Cole White, a cook, resigned after he was identified on Twitter for protesting. His former employer posted this letter on the front door, saying White no longer works at Top Dog. Actor Jennifer Lawrence also taking a stand, telling her 16 million Facebook followers, "These are the faces of hate. Look closely and post anyone you find. You can't hide with the internet, you pathetic cowards."
There's always a risk that the wrong person could be identified, but people have to recognize that whatever they're doing in public is now up for grabs.
Big business challenged, too. Social media called out website hosting company GoDaddy, asking why it allowed neo-Nazi group The Daily Stormer to use its services. Soon after, GoDaddy severed its ties. When The Daily Stormer moved to Google, it was kicked off within hours. Social media proving in today's digital age, there's nowhere to hide. Jolene Kent, NBC News, Los Angeles.
The violence in Charlottesville has focused much of the nation's attention on a segment of society that many may not have realized was so organized and so connected as white supremacists come out of the shadows. So what's behind their rise? Here's NBC News justice correspondent Pete Williams.
Clashes over symbols of the Confederacy have brought white supremacist hate groups into the open that for years have operated in the shadows. The number of Ku Klux Klan chapters is actually down, but neo-Confederate and other groups are on the rise, sometimes inspiring deadly attacks.
We are seeing more and more people who are not necessarily affiliated with any group, but who have become highly interested in the movement and motivated to carry out, in many cases, real criminal violence.
Noting that trend, a federal bulletin in May said the white supremacist extremist movement will likely continue to pose a threat of lethal violence. After the 2015 shooting at a black church in South Carolina that killed nine, pictures surfaced of the gunman, Dylan Roof, with symbols of the Confederacy, prompting calls to remove Confederate symbols from public places. Charlottesville's decision in April to take down a statue of Robert E. Lee sparked three protests, demonstrations too in May in New Orleans over a Lee statue there, and a similar one in June in Houston, and just last weekend in San Antonio. Today, the president of the Jacksonville, Florida City Council called for an inventory of all such symbols on public property. And civil rights advocates say President Trump's overheated campaign rhetoric made hate groups think their message was no longer taboo.
For evil to triumph.
A former FBI agent whose undercover work with white supremacists led to the movie Imperium, starring Daniel Radcliffe, says a lax police response to hate group protests is asking for trouble.
These are groups that are used to hearing dog whistles from public officials. So they take that as a green light. We are approving of this violence.
Attorney General Sessions says the government should look at what happened last weekend to see if future responses can help prevent trouble, Lester.
All right, Pete, and while we have you here, what can you tell us about this potential terrorism arrest in Oklahoma over the weekend?
Well, we learned today, Lester, that the FBI arrested a 23-year-old man, Jerry Drake Varnell, accusing him of plotting to set off a bomb to emulate Timothy McVeigh, the 1995 Oklahoma federal building bomber. They say Varnell parked a van outside an Oklahoma City bank on Saturday, thinking it contained a powerful bomb, hoping to make an anti-government statement, but it was a dud provided by the FBI after months of meetings with an undercover agent, Lester.
All right, Pete Williams, thank you. From overseas tonight, new images showing North Korea's Kim Jong-un reviewing plans for a missile strike that his country has threatened to launch toward the U.S. territory of Guam. But if North Korea actually goes through with it, Defense Secretary Mattis today promised swift military action. NBC's Andrea Mitchell has the story for us.
Tonight, Defense Secretary Mattis confidently telling reporters the U.S. would know within moments if a North Korean missile is fired at Guam and will take it out. Adding, if they fire at the U.S., it could escalate very quickly. It's called war. If they hit the U.S., including Guam, Mattis said, if they do that, it's game on. U.S. officials say China is the key to a diplomatic solution. But today, the president is launching an investigation into Beijing's theft of U.S. trade secrets.
And this is just the beginning. I want to tell you that. This is just the beginning.
Mr. Trump eager to keep a campaign promise.
We can't continue to allow China to rape our country.
But slamming China now could be a problem, just as the Joint Chiefs chairman was arriving in Beijing. Earlier in South Korea, saying China is key to cracking down on Kim Jong-un.
It's going to require China not only to do what they did at the United Nations Security Council, which was to vote for sanctions, but to enforce those sanctions.
Another sticking point, the president's fiery rhetoric, rattling U.S. allies, reports NBC's Bill Neely in Seoul.
South Korea's President Moon is calling on the U.S. to stop any war through diplomacy. He says he's certain the U.S. will act calmly and responsibly. Not everyone's certain here. This is a nervous country.
And a nervous region, hearing the president's tough talk.
This kind of rhetoric jangles the system and creates the possibility of miscalculation on the military side. That's why it's dangerous.
Tonight, North Korea says Kim Jong-un was presented with those plans for a missile launch towards Guam, now ordering his military to be ready to strike whenever he gives the order. Lester.
Andrea Mitchell in Washington, thanks. Still ahead tonight, danger on the set. Tom Cruise injured performing a stunt for the next Mission Impossible movie. And today, tragedy striking the set of another hotly anticipated sequel. A familiar sound is about to fall silent in London and won't be heard again for a long time to come. The bongs of the iconic bell, Big Ben, will be stopped after chiming at noon a week from today for a $38 million repair job on the Queen Elizabeth Tower, which houses the clock. It won't return to regular service until 2021. Tonight there is word of a tragic accident on the set of a Hollywood blockbuster. A stunt woman was killed in a motorcycle wreck while filming the sequel to Deadpool, starring Ryan Reynolds. And it comes a day after Tom Cruise was injured while filming a sequel of his own. NBC's Morgan Radford has details.
Tom Cruise, one of Hollywood's biggest and most bankable stars. Known for his comedic timing.
Show me the money!
And doing his own supersized stunts.
That's the monster!
That's a key component of what makes Tom Cruise Tom Cruise.
But yesterday, the 55-year-old actor fell short when he attempted to jump between buildings on the London set of Mission Impossible 6. On a subsequent take, he misses his mark again and is in pain as he limps away. Still, stunt work can be dangerous business, even deadly. On the Vancouver set of Deadpool 2 today, a stunt woman died when witnesses say she appeared to lose control of her motorcycle, which went barreling into a building across the street. And just last month, stuntman John Bernecker died of head injury sustained from a fall on the set of The Walking Dead.
Is the movie industry pushing actors to do more dramatic stunts?
Well, I think in recent years you've seen actually a reaction to the fact that there was a lot of CGI work, a lot of green screen work, and what you're seeing now is a lot of practical effects because there's a sense that it creates more realism.
But those high risks can come at a high price. Morgan Radford, NBC News, New York.
When we come back, let the countdown begin. What you'll need to see a once-in-a-lifetime show in the sky. Finally, tonight, it's not just the event of the summer. Who knows? It may also be the event of the century. Anticipation beginning to reach a fever pitch as Americans get ready to witness the first coast-to-coast total eclipse in 99 years. NBC's Kerry Sanders with more now on how and where to watch.
The countdown is underway, less than a week to go, and in towns like Hopkinsville, Kentucky, Makenda, Illinois, and Madras, Oregon, a flood of spectators getting ready to see what happens when the moon blocks the sun. A ribbon of darkness will descend across the United States from the northwest in Oregon all the way to Charleston, South Carolina. The shadow, approximately 67 miles wide, will race across the country at an average of 1,700 miles per hour, two times faster than a supersonic jet. It'll be a celestial show lasting more than 4 hours, but the total eclipse, which is so rare, will last at most 2 minutes, 38 seconds.
So the biggest thing is safety first. We never look at the sun with an unprotected eye.
Harvard astrophysicist Dr. Kelly Korick says protective glasses are a must. NASA says just because something is labeled as solar viewing glasses online does not mean they're what you need.
No matter where you are in the continental United States, you'll get a glimpse of the eclipse. Here in Miami, it'll be 80%. The glasses are a must, with the symbol inside ISO. But because that can even be faked, when you put the glasses on and look up, you shouldn't be able to see anything until the moon moves in front of the sun during the most watched eclipse ever.
I am absolutely giddy about the event and actually seeing something with my own eyes.
Miss it now, your next chance will be 2024. Kerry Sanders, NBC News, Miami.
Certified space geek here. Can't wait. We appreciate you spending part of your evening with us. That is Nightly News for this Monday night. I'm Lester Holt. For all of us at NBC News, thank you for watching and good night.